If you try, you will be punished. I fought down the urge to cry, helplessly. I was trapped. My hands and feet were stuck to the floor, and I couldn't see a thing. The spell wouldn't last, I knew, but it didn't have to last very long. I thought I could hear footsteps, someone walking towards me. Akin and Rose didn't want to hurt me, but the Gesh didn't give them a choice. If they wanted to kick me while I was down... I won't try that again, I said desperately. Someone was right behind me, weren't they? I could hear... something. I'll cut my own wire. The world suddenly blazed with blinding light. I squeezed my eyes shut, then opened them slowly. The spell blinding me had broken, or been removed, I wasn't sure. The spell holding my hands and feet to the stone vanished a moment later. I collapsed to the floor, shaking. I'd known I was vulnerable, but now... I wasn't sure I could get anything past Akin and Rose. The horror on their faces didn't help. They might have been unwilling jailers, but they were jailers nonetheless. I'm sorry, Akin said. He was babbling. I honestly wasn't sure who he thought he was talking to. Me or his family. I'm sorry. I picked myself up, carefully. He was sorry? I was trapped, and he was my jailer, and he was sorry, and... I told myself firmly that it wasn't his fault, but it was hard to believe it. Rose passed me the wire wordlessly. I cursed my mistake under my breath as I started to cut the golden thread, hoping her mere presence would be enough to cause problems. Rose might not have realized the problem, not when she hadn't been there for Magister Tallyman's experiments. But Akin had. I should have made sure he hadn't overheard the order. It was too late now. The wardcracker took shape, piece by piece. It was an elegant design, I had to admit. It looked almost like a wire hand, with gemstones trapped in the silver lattice instead of bones. And yet, it was dangerous. Someone using it could break through almost any ward in the city. I thought that the wardcracker wouldn't survive contact with a really powerful ward, but it would still take the ward down too. The city guard was supposed to have a wardcracker that dated all the way back to the Thousand-Year Empire and was still functioning. I couldn't help wondering how the original forgers had compensated for the magic surge. "Stay well clear," I ordered, as I pushed the final pieces into place. It should work. Akin had watched me like a hawk, nudging Rose away whenever she got too close. But if I was wrong, I thought the spell form would still take shape. It just wouldn't be perfect. Here we go. I carved the final rune into the handle. The wardcracker blazed with light. It was so bright that I had to cover my eyes and turn away, although it didn't help. It felt as though the light was burning into my very skull. There was something about it that felt wrong. And then the light snapped out of existence, leaving the wardcracker lying on the table. I reached out gingerly and picked it up. It felt ready. It's perfect, Akin breathed. I hoped he was wrong. I hoped it wouldn't survive its first encounter with a powerful ward, but I had no way to know. I had no way to know either if Feruza would believe I'd sabotaged it somehow, or if it was just a problem with the design. I'd done the calculations in my head. Akin had checked the ones I'd written down. But I knew they were far from precise. Too much could go wrong with the design. Rose touched my shoulder. I leaned into her embrace, feeling bitter. It would have been great if I'd done it for myself. A working wardcracker would have been a remarkable achievement. But now, Feruza was going to take it, and what? A wardcracker could be used for all sorts of things. Very few of them were good. She could try to break into the family hall, if she wished, I thought. Dad's wards were strong, and he had good reason to know that there might be new objects of power on the way. But I wasn't sure how well they'd stand up to my work. or even break into the palace itself. The door opened. "Very well done," Feruza said as she stepped into the room. She sounded amused. "You did a very good job." I glared at her sullenly. "Can we go now?" "I'm afraid not," Feruza said. "But I will consider a few other requests." "Something to play, when we're not working," I said. "A chessboard, perhaps." Feruza smiled. "We'll see what we can find," she said. I had the odd feeling she meant it. "Anything else?" "Books," Aiken put in. "I want to write a letter home," I said. "You can sneak it out." "I'm afraid not," Feruza said. "It would be far too revealing." "You could read it first," I said. "And you could take care with any reply." "No," Feruza said. Her voice was firm. "And that's the end of it." "And we have to get out of here," I thought. "Or we'll go mad." Chapter 25. I would have enjoyed the next few days, if we hadn't been prisoners. It was what I'd wanted, I knew all too well. The chance to be useful, to be the sort of person others asked for help. And yet I was a prisoner. Feruza came every day with a new request, a new demand for an object of power. And I had no choice but to forge it for her. I had no idea what she intended to do with them, or what whoever was backing her wanted to do with them. But I doubted I'd like it when I found out. I had to find a way to get us out of the trap. And yet, it was hard to prepare an escape when I was being watched like a hawk. Rose stayed with me all the time, even when I was in the bathroom. Aiken watched and checked my work, alert for even the slightest hint of sabotage. If he'd known everything, I was fairly sure that there would have been no hope of escape. As it was, gathering the tools, charged gemstones, and potions I needed was difficult. He certainly wouldn't have let me get away with what little I was doing if he'd noticed.
"That was a good game," Aiken said.
He'd been playing Rose. Chess was supposed to be a nobleman's game, but Rose had admitted that she'd learnt to play a long time before she'd gone to Jude's.
"You're getting better at this."
"She beat you 3-2, I pointed out. Aiken didn't seem to take it personally, but there were some noblemen who'd be horrified at the thought of a commoner beating them at anything. "Shall we have some tea before we go to bed?" I rose as Aiken reset the board and poured hot water into the teapot, then added a tiny splash of makeshift sleeping potion. It wouldn't be enough to send them to sleep, not immediately. But once they were asleep, it would keep them out for at least 5 hours. I'd be drinking it too, yet, if I was right, the magic would fade before it managed to take effect. And if I was wrong, well, I'd just have to come up with something else.
"We should have another game," Aiken said. "Winner takes all."
"I'm still ahead of you," Rose said. "You'd have to beat me at least twice." I smiled, pouring 3 mugs of tea and passing them around. Aiken took his and sipped it, gently. I did my best to pretend I wasn't watching as he drank. If he noticed something funny about the taste, he'd alert Feruza, and then I'd be in deep trouble. Rose drank her tea quickly. I was less worried about her noticing something wrong, and then headed for the bedroom. I waited until she'd finished in the bathroom, then moved to follow her. Aiken already looked tired as he headed for his own bedroom. He didn't seem to notice when I left the bedroom door slightly ajar. Rose lay down on her mattress, looking tired. I hoped she didn't realize that she was too tired as I lay down myself. I'd have to stay awake, somehow, until her snores told me she was deeply asleep. I forced myself to design newer and better objects of power in my head, trying to think of something that might get us out of the trap. It was a shame that Aiken was so good at forging. Someone who didn't know so much might miss what I was doing until it was too late.
But even a complete novice would notice if I was forging a suit of armor, I thought, as Rose began to snore. And I have to hope they're not watching the suite too closely. I forced myself to wait until Rose's snores became regular, then slipped out of bed as quietly as I could. For once, my sisters had been useful. I'd had a great deal of practice in sneaking around. I listened carefully at the door for several minutes, then crept into the workroom and checked Aiken's door. It was firmly shut. I picked up my spectacles and peered at the wooden door. It was crawling with nasty-looking wards. Clever, I thought. I felt a flash of warm affection. Aiken hadn't managed to beat the Gesh, but he'd found a way to subvert it, just a little. Even he would need several minutes to take down his wards in the morning. I'd have plenty of warning if he decided to get up and check the workroom in the middle of the night. That's something I'll have to exploit for myself. I kept the spectacles on as I walked to the metal door. It was glowing faintly, confirming my suspicion that it was barred by magic. I couldn't see enough of the spell to see the spell form, but it didn't matter. I knew how to take it down, if I wanted. But I had no idea what else was on the far side of the door. I wasn't sure of anything, except for one thing. We had to get out of the trap before it was too late. And we don't even know what time it is, I thought. I'd asked for a clock, but Veruza had flatly refused to provide one. It felt like the middle of the night, yet... was it? I'd been told that people who took too much sleeping potion often lost track of the time, their bodies insisting that it was the middle of the night, while the sun insisted it was midday. We don't even know how long we've been here. I pushed the thought aside as I walked back to the work table. I didn't have much time. If Aiken or Rose woke up, I was in deep trouble. I'd done as much as I could in the open. I'd explained that I was preparing additional supplies for future projects, but I knew I was about to start something I couldn't explain. If I was caught, I was dead. The ancients had done wonders, I reflected, as I pulled the spellcasters together. I wasn't entirely sure I understood the calculations, but it allowed me to rig up wands and focusing devices without asking Rose or Aiken to cast the spells for me. The spells lacked the finesse of a trained magician, yet it wouldn't matter. All that mattered was that it would give me the ability to cast spells without magic of my own. And yet, I asked myself, where does the power come from? Magister Niven's question nagged at my mind. I'd built objects of power that were using magic, some very intense magic. A ward cracker might just feed off the ward it cracked, and some of my protections drew their power from the spells they absorbed or redirected. But where did the spellcasters get their magic? And how could I even use them? Jabbing the pointy end towards the target seemed to be more than enough. I had the strangest feeling that I was on the verge of a breakthrough. If I had time to plan some experiments, carry them out and then sit down and think about the results. But I didn't have time. I didn't even dare write anything down for later. I put the spellcasters aside. It was lucky that I had convinced Aiken that he shouldn't touch my prepared supplies, as it allowed me to hide something on the top shelf of the cupboard, and I started to work on a new set of protections. The earrings were too noticeable, I felt, but I could work the same design into makeshift bracelets and ankle chains. Wearing several would allow me to balance my protections, even making them stronger. It ran the risk of one of them overheating. It couldn't reflect the spell back if it was covered. But I just have to live with it. Thankfully, they were flimsy enough that I could just break one of them off if necessary. It was tempting, very tempting, to slip one on and wear it, but I didn't dare. Rose and Aiken knew I didn't have any jewelry. They'd certainly reported if they saw me wearing a bracelet, even if it wasn't apparently an object of power. Instead, I put them next to the spellcasters and concealed them behind random supplies. They just have to remain hidden for a day or two. And I could break the spells on them if I dared, I thought sourly. A dispeller, like the one I'd forged for Janine, would probably break the Gesh, but Feruza would notice immediately. I knew she spoke to Aiken and Rose every day, conversations they hadn't been allowed to share with me. I'll have to stun them too before I get them out of here. I put a dispeller together anyway and concealed it with the rest of the gear, then walked back to the door and listened. There was no one outside, as far as I could tell, but that meant nothing. The door was solid metal, effectively soundproofed. There was probably a silencing charm or two on the far side of the door, too. Rose or Aiken might be able to sense it, but I couldn't. The spectacles couldn't tell me enough to be useful. There could be anything on the other side. I cursed under my breath. I could go now. I could get out. But where would I go? I didn't know. I knew nothing about the layout of the building, let alone where we were in the wider world. It wouldn't be that hard to build a compass that would point to Shalit, or Aiken's family at least, but we might be hundreds of miles away. Firouza had told us that it was a very long way to civilization. She might be lying, of course. And yet, keeping us close to the city would be incredibly dangerous. An alert guardsman might just realize that a country house was suddenly buying more food than before. And she wants to keep us foraging for her, I thought. She intends to keep us prisoner permanently. I rubbed my tired forehead. Firouza couldn't be the person in charge. If nothing else, her superior wouldn't want to show himself, or herself, to us. Proving that someone wealthy and powerful had been behind the kidnapping wouldn't be easy. And yet, if someone started selling new objects of power, it would be a red flag to Dad. Whoever was selling the items certainly wouldn't be able to produce a second Zero, when asked. The yawn crept up and took me by surprise. I leaned against the wall for a long moment, then slowly walked back to the bedroom. I'd prepared most of the potions I'd need, but the remaining elements would have to be put together on the spot. And if I was wrong, I'd be in deep trouble. But there was no reason to hope for ransom. Firouza and her unknown superior had more to gain from using me than selling me back to my family. And they won't return Rose and Aiken either, I thought numbly. I sneaked back into the bedroom and checked Rose. She was still sleeping, snoring loudly. I felt a flicker of envy, combined with fear. I was too valuable to kill, and Aiken was too dangerous to kill. His family might notice his death. But Rose was useless. Her only value lay in supervising me. And if they catch us trying to escape, they might decide to be a little stricter, I thought grimly. Rose would become expendable. I shuddered as I crawled into bed, silently promising myself that I'd do everything in my power to get Rose out. She'd tried to stop me from allowing my emotions to guide me, and she'd been right. And she was the one most at risk. Firouza could order her to hurt or kill herself, and she would obey. I just couldn't save her unless I got out before it was too late. And it is worth the risk, I told myself firmly. Whatever the risk, I have to take it. Rose was shaking me a second later. I started, utterly confused. Rose? I must have dozed off. What time was it? I felt like I hadn't slept at all. How long had I been asleep? I wasn't sure. It's morning, Rose said. She reached out and touched my forehead. You feel hot? I groaned. My head felt thick as well as hot, a grim reminder that I really hadn't had enough sleep. I'd never been any more likely to get sick than my sisters. My mother had dosed us all with potion whenever something started going around. But now, I shuddered, fighting down the urge to retch. Maybe I'd accidentally swallowed something I shouldn't have, or breathed in the wrong fumes. Or, I remembered the sleeping potion and scowled. I might have accidentally poisoned myself. Bad dreams, I said, sitting upright. Can you pass me a glass of water? Rose shot me a grateful look. I'd worded it as a request, and headed for the bathroom. I kept my eyes firmly fixed on the bed, breathing hard. I couldn't get ill, not now. If Feruza called in a qualified healer, he might find traces of the sleeping potion in my blood, and then Feruza would ask questions. Neither Rose nor Aiken would have the answers, but it wouldn't matter. She'd keep digging until she found out the truth, and then I didn't want to know. Rose came back, carrying a glass in one hand. I took it and sipped gratefully. Water would help, I thought. It would certainly be better than asking Feruza for a painkilling potion or something else. I could brew one for myself, or get Aiken to brew it for me, but even that would be risky. Feruza would probably be informed. "That's better," I said slowly. "Thank you." I touched my forehead. There was a sheen of cold sweat on my forehead. I rubbed it gently, then climbed out of bed. My legs felt unsteady, but I made it to the washroom without incident. Rose watched, silently, as I splashed water on my face. I wanted a shower, or a hot bath, but I doubted I had the time. Aiken was probably waiting for us already. Breakfast was already waiting when we stumbled into the workroom. Bacon, eggs, freshly baked bread. It confirmed Rose's suspicion, I supposed, that we were near a farm. I took heart from that, even though there was no way to know if the farmers were friendly. My family could offer enough money to raise a farming family into the nobility. If nothing else, they'd be able to alert the kinsmen. Aiken smiled at me as we ate our eggs.
"Did you sleep well?"
"Bad dreams," I said tartly. I didn't dare say anything that might be misinterpreted, or interpreted all too well.
"How about you?"
He looked down at his food. I didn't blame him. We were prisoners. We couldn't afford to forget it. Playing chess and chatting about nothing was meaningless, when our lives could be ended at any moment. I would sooner have been in jail. There was something honest about a jail cell. "But you've never been in a jail cell," I reminded myself. Alana had locked me in a room once, but it hadn't been quite the same. A jail might be worse. I sighed. I really could have enjoyed spending all my time in a workroom if I hadn't been a prisoner. But I was a prisoner. The door opened. Feruza stepped into the room. She looked disgustingly fresh and alert, as if she'd just had a good night's sleep, a shower, and a hearty breakfast. I felt a flash of pure hatred mingled with bitter rage. I could break the spells on my friends now, but Feruza wouldn't have any trouble stopping them in their tracks. I'd seen enough to know she was a powerful magician. The only way to stop her would be to take her by surprise.
"I have a special task for you today," she said.
She held out a scroll.
"I want you to make this potion."
I scanned the recipe, then blanched. I'd seen it before, in one of Mum's old books. The Thousand-Year Empire had devised it to knock down city walls, heavily warded city walls. But the secret of its production had been lost long ago. And yet, I knew now that the potion needed someone without magic to make it. I could do it. Aiken and Mum couldn't get through a third of the recipe without causing an explosion.
"I could bring down the building," I said carefully. "This could go wrong."
"Not if you brew the potion," Feruza said. "And you will, won't you?"
I looked at her nervously. There was no use for the potion but widespread devastation. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near the potion when someone lit a match and tossed it into the liquid. It would burn down Aguire Hall, or Ruben Hall, or even Tintagel Castle itself. And then it would keep burning until it had consumed all the magic in the vicinity. I couldn't do it.
"You will," Feruza said.
She pointed a finger at Rose, who cringed back. The Gesh wouldn't even let her defend herself.
"Or do I have to take steps to make you?"
"I will," I said.
But they have to keep their distance.
Thruza nodded slowly.
Very well, she said.
She placed a small bell on the table.
Summon me when you are done. And have fun.
I kept my face impassive. It would take a day, perhaps 2 days, to brew the potion. It was a very complex piece of work. And then I shook my head. We couldn't let her take something so dangerous to her superiors. We had to move. There was no longer any time to plan. I'd have to put the escape plan into action and hope for the best. And if we fail to get out before the potion is ready, I told myself, she'll unleash a nightmare. Chapter 26. The potion looked deceptively simple. I felt sweat running down my face as I watched the multicolored liquid bubbling over the stove. It might have looked simple, but it was anything but. I had to prepare multiple cauldrons of various potions, all within a very short space of time. And I couldn't even brew each of the liquids separately, then use freeze charms to keep them in stasis until I was ready for them. They couldn't touch active magic without either going bad or exploding. I'm going to need more room, I said. The third cauldron was changing color now, shifting from green to brown. I could see sparks within the murky liquid. I hoped that was normal. No one had brewed this potion successfully for hundreds of years.
Can you push the table into place, then get into the back room?
Aiken looked doubtful. I didn't really blame him. The Gesh demanded that he let me work, but it also insisted that he had to keep an eye on me. Moving the table would force him and Rose into the back room, where they couldn't watch me. But there was no choice. A magician who stood too close to the cauldrons would trigger an explosion. My calculations suggested that the resulting blast, combined with the potion's magic, would be more than enough to destroy the royal palace of Tintagel. Thruza wasn't being careless, leaving me alone. I had a potion that could take out the entire building, wherever we were, at the cost of killing everyone, including myself. She knew I'd never kill my friends. And she was smart enough to leave as soon as I started, I thought. My body ached with the memory of just how long I'd been working on the potion. She just left us a bell to call her when we were done.
Hurry!
I said as the liquid bubbled furiously.
I need this away from the other cauldrons.
Aiken hurried to do as he was told. I breathed a sigh of relief. Thruza really should have left me completely alone, although she wasn't that foolish. As he put the table into place, then slipped into the back room. He left the door open so he could watch me, but it didn't matter any longer. He couldn't come into the room without risking an explosion. If nothing else, the Gesh will have problems deciding how to react, I thought. I didn't think the spell was that clever, particularly if it had been forced on an unwilling victim. It wouldn't know what to do if it was faced with an unanticipated problem or a conflict between two different sets of orders. He might be unable to move until it was too late. I hoped that was true as I moved from cauldron to cauldron, inspecting the liquid. The timer ticked, counting down the last few minutes. I wiped my brow, cursing the original alchemist under my breath. What sort of mind would see potential in such a brew, let alone work their way through the thousands of variants? Mum had been known to mutter that some of the ancients must have been insane. I was starting to think she was right. Who could possibly have imagined that such a complex potion was workable? They knew more than we did about alchemy, I reminded myself. The stories talked of potions and magics well beyond anything we knew. Flying machines were the least of them. They must have understood alchemy at a far greater level. I wiped my forehead and took a breath. The air smelled funny, a sickly sweet smell that made me feel unwell. I forced myself to breathe through my mouth, wishing I'd had the foresight to don a mask. I could have asked for one too, I was sure. Thruza had been quite accommodating with everything I said I'd needed, save for freedom. She hadn't let me out of the suite since I'd arrived. Which would have told me more about where I was,
I thought. I tried hard to keep track of the days, but I honestly wasn't sure just how long I'd been a prisoner. Maybe 3 to 4 weeks, perhaps? Aiken had found my makeshift calendar and hexed me. We just don't know what is on the other side of the door. I eyed the door grimly, knowing I didn't have time to wait any longer. I had to get out and take the others with me. And I couldn't rely on them, not as long as they were enchanted. I cursed Feruza once again. Perhaps using my friends as jailers was a sign of weakness, a sign that she really didn't have many people working for her. Or perhaps it was a ruthlessly practical solution to a problem. Even Magister Tallyman would have problems telling the difference between the work I'd been forced to do for my captors and my escape plan. Putting 2 more cauldrons on the table, I rapidly filled them with ingredients and lit the stoves. It didn't need magic, not yet. If I'd done my work properly, the 2 potions wouldn't need magic at all. And if I hadn't... I eyed the potions in the cauldrons nervously. A misjudgment now would get us all killed. The timer rang loudly. I jumped, then scrambled to the first cauldron and tipped its contents into the second. The liquid blazed with white light, then faded back into a simmering blue. It looked beautiful, I thought, as I reached for the 3rd cauldron and started to pour it into the 2nd. Steam exploded upwards, making me swear as I took a step backwards. Mum would have exploded, with rage, I hoped, if she'd heard my language. If I'd made a mistake... There was a final flare of light. Then the liquid subsided into a viscous, oily fluid. I let out a sigh of relief as I checked it carefully, before pouring it all into a 4th cauldron and putting it on a table of its own. I'd fudged the figures a little, just to keep Aiken and Rose out of the workroom, but I couldn't help eyeing it nervously. I wasn't sure what would happen if I took the spellcasters too close to the cauldron, and I didn't want to find out the hard way. I sat on the chair, fighting to gather my breath. It had worked. Barely. The 1st stage was completed. The 2nd stage was on the way. Whoever had come up with the recipe must have had more than 1 0 under his command, I decided. I'd worked myself ragged trying to brew all the different components on my own. I hoped, prayed, that Dad would find another 0 soon enough, if only so I had assistance. But it would take years to train my new partner up. And what? A little voice asked at the back of my head. If you're truly unique. I shivered. What if I was a throwback to some long-gone past when magic wasn't universal? What if I was just a freak? What if I was truly alone? The 2nd time rang. I sprang to my feet and hurried over to the next set of cauldrons, pushing my thoughts to the back of my mind. The 3 liquids had to be mixed together, but in a precise order. I checked my notes, just to be sure that I knew what I was doing. Then started to empty the 1st cauldron into the 2nd. This time there was no flash of light, just a faint shimmer as the 2 liquids blended together. I reached for the stirrer and stirred carefully, unsure what was going to happen. Nothing did, as far as I could tell. It was inert. It's meant to be inert, I reminded myself. I'd done my best to work out how all the different ingredients interacted, but I wasn't sure I'd done my calculations correctly. Mum would have done a better job, I felt. She'd have checked and rechecked everything obsessively before letting me get to work. If she'd let me brew the potion in the 1st place... She certainly wouldn't have wanted to brew it anywhere near the family hall. I kept stirring, carefully counting the stirs. 51 stirs, no more, no less. It was a precise infusion of magic, so precise that no one short of a potions master could have hoped to muster it. I wondered idly if I was cheating. The stirrers I'd designed made it so much easier to measure the infusion, assuming, of course, that I had magic. Or a source of magic. The wretched question nagged at my mind again. Where did the power come from? The 3rd cauldron bubbled loudly. I poured the contents into the 2nd, stirring rapidly to mix the liquids together.
It shimmered for a long moment, then turned an eerie green color that made my head hurt. The smell changed too, turning into something foul and thoroughly unpleasant. I gritted my teeth, resisting the urge to stagger backwards and retch loudly. If I moved away from the cauldron before the liquid was ready, everything I'd done would be wasted. I didn't want to start from scratch. We really need to find help, I thought. Aiken's idea of humanoid automatons might have potential if they didn't need magic to run. But it's just a matter of chance. I raised my voice.
I'm going to do the final step now, I called. Stay as far from the door as you can.
Aiken's voice was strangled.
Will do!
I winced in sympathy. The Gesh was pulling him in two directions at once. Rose had it easier, I supposed. She simply didn't know enough to fear what I might do if left unobserved for long enough to forge something dangerous. But Aiken didn't know I'd already prepared most of my tools. He clearly assumed, and the Gesh would read it in his mind, that I wouldn't have had enough time to prepare something he couldn't handle. And he would be right, too, I admitted sourly. All someone has to do to keep me prisoner is tie me up or throw me into a locked and empty cell. I sighed. Being kidnapped had proved a learning experience and a grim reminder of my own vulnerability. All young magicians learnt basic cantrips for untying knots and opening locks, but I couldn't make them work.
Be careful, Rose said.
She'd watched as I'd done the calculations. She knew how dangerous the potion was, even though I'd done my best to exaggerate the dangers, insofar as that was possible. Thankfully, Aiken hadn't taken a close look at the figures.
Don't get us all blown up!
I won't, I promised. Rose had good reason to remember the last time I'd made a potion explode.
Just stay well away from the danger zone. We will, Aiken said. And you tell us what you're doing.
I don't think I can do two things at once, I said. Mum had told me never to multitask when I was brewing.
The potion needs all my concentration.
I contemplated the possibilities of disaster for a long moment, then lifted up the full cauldron and carried it over to the one I'd made earlier. The steam grew stronger, but nothing else happened. I braced myself, then picked up a ladle and lowered a precise amount of the first fluid into the second. There was a bright shimmer, then nothing but steam. We hadn't reached critical mass, not yet. I nodded. My calculations had said as much. Then ladled two more spoonfuls into the second cauldron. Things started to happen as soon as the third ladleful was lowered into the liquid. I jumped back as blinding white light filled the room. It felt badly wrong, as if it was burning through my skin and gnawing at my bones. I thought I saw my flesh turn translucent, just for a second. I turned away, taking what cover I could. The potion hadn't exploded yet, but I didn't know what was about to happen. There was a lot of magic wrapped up in that cauldron, slowly going critical. And there's quite a bit of the activator left, I thought. I'd planned as much, making twice as much of the first potion than I needed. I'd had a number of ideas about how it could be used in our bid to escape. All I have to do is bottle it up. The light slowly faded. I turned my head, half covering my eyes. Light seemed to be hovering over the cauldron, blazing so brightly that I couldn't make out anything on the far side. I hoped Aiken and Rose were cowering in the back room, keeping their magic well away from the unstable potion. I crept to the supply cupboards, picked out a handful of bottles, and then recovered two of the spellcasters. I'd only get one shot at using them. Aiken was remarkably quick to cast spells, and Rose wasn't a slouch. And if they cast a spell in here, they'll blow us all up, I thought, as I slipped one of the protective bracelets onto my wrist. I told them that the danger zone grew exponentially as more and more cauldrons were added, although I didn't think that was true. My calculations suggested that there were actually a number of danger zones, one per cauldron,
But it didn't really matter. They'll still be able to overpower me physically. The light was dimming rapidly now, leaving spots dancing behind my eyes. I concealed the spellcasters in my sleeves as I walked to the door and peered inside. Aiken was leaning against the far wall, reading a book. Rose was sitting on the bed, drawing runes on a sheet of paper. Aiken had started to teach her some of the more complex runes, the ones that had been drilled into my head when I was younger. I rather thought he was a better teacher than some of the tutors Dad had hired. I pulled the first spellcaster from my sleeve and jabbed it at Aiken. His eyes went wide a moment before he shrank rapidly and turned into a tiny statuette. Rose let out a gasp and threw a hex at me, which sparkled out of existence as the bracelet worked its magic. I jabbed the spellcaster at her a second later, transfiguring her too. They were going to hate me when they returned to normal, I knew. I wasn't sure if the spell would leave them conscious in those inanimate forms, or if their thoughts were frozen. If the former, they were about to have a very unpleasant time of it. Alana had turned me into something inanimate far too often. "I'm sorry," I said as I picked them up. They seemed to stare at me accusingly. "I can't see any other way to get you out of here." I put them into my pocket, then walked back into the workroom. I was careful to keep my distance from the cauldrons as I strode around to the supply cupboards and opened them. I'd planned what to do carefully, very carefully. It only took me a moment to fill a bag with everything I thought I might need. I slung it over my shoulder, stuck the remaining spellcasters into my belt, then strode over to the door. Feruza shouldn't be able to see what I was doing. The surge of magic from the potion would have damaged any spying spell she was using, but I knew better than to count on it. I dropped the bag by the wall, then walked back to the potions and matched the activator with one of my private brews. It shimmered to life, then waited. I poured some of the liquid into the bottles and added them to my bag, then splashed the rest of the liquid on the floor. It would make life interesting for anyone who wanted to recover the brew. "Here we go," I thought, as if I hadn't been committed the moment I'd shown Aiken and Rose the spellcasters. I poured a third potion by the door, then reached for the bell and took cover behind a table. "Let's see what happens." I rang the bell. There was a long pause, long enough for me to wonder if Feruza wasn't waiting for me to ring. She wouldn't want to be anywhere near the brewing, for fear that her mere presence would trigger an explosion, or in the danger zone if I accidentally messed up the recipe and caused an explosion myself. I told myself grimly that I could break down the door if I had to, but my one shot at Feruza would be lost. And yet, I hesitated, unsure what to do. What if... Someone started unlocking the bolts on the far side. My blood ran cold. If this went wrong, I'd kill myself and my friends. A single mistake would be disastrous. Dad wouldn't approve of me trying to escape normally, I thought. I had to smile at the thought, even though time was fast running out. It would be dangerous. But now, I shook my head. I didn't have a choice. Feruza wasn't a common kidnapper. She and her cronies, and her superior, hadn't taken me for ransom, but for what I could do for them. There was no hope of freedom if I stayed with them, no matter what I did. They wanted me to work, not to sit and wait to be free. They were irrevocably committed the moment they'd taken Aiken as well as me. "And if they can't have me," I reminded myself, "they'll make sure that no one else can have me either." The door opened. A second later, an explosion shook the room. Chapter 27. I jumped up, spellcaster at the ready. Feruza stood in the doorway, flickers of light blazing around her. She'd taken the brunt of the blasts on her wards. She'd clearly had more protections than I'd realized, even though I'd managed to take a look at her with my spectacles. But she'd been shocked. I jabbed the spellcaster at her, blasting her back through the door and down the corridor. There was no way to fine-tune the spell, but it shouldn't matter. The force should have knocked her out. Jamming my spectacles into place, I grabbed my bag and ran forward. The suite opened into a network of corridors, leading in all directions. The only light came from a series of lanterns, hanging from the walls. I threw another blasting spell after Firouza, then picked another corridor at random. The walls were cold stone, but there was a style about them that was oddly familiar. It nagged at my mind as I ran, keeping one hand on my spectacles. Wards and protective spells would be invisible to me, without the spectacles, until I actually ran into them. Flickers of magic danced along the walls. Very odd flickers of magic. But there were no actual wards. That makes no sense, I thought. I reached an intersection, listened carefully, then picked a direction at random. If I could find a window, or a map, or something else that showed me the layout of the building, escape would be a great deal easier. They have to be hiding us behind heavy wards. I puzzled over it as I ran, listening carefully for signs of life. How big was the building? The family hall was big and Jude's was bigger, but this building felt immense. There were dozens, perhaps hundreds of empty rooms, all coated with layers of dust. A thought struck me and refused to go away, even though I knew it was nonsense. Were we in Jude's? That couldn't be true, could it? Rolf and his friends wouldn't have had to lure me out of the school if they'd meant to conceal me inside the school, right? Don't be stupid, I told myself sharply. We're nowhere near the school. A ward flared into life in front of me, an instant before I would have run straight into it and gotten trapped, or worse. I didn't think kidnappers would have bothered to make their wards gentle. I yanked the dispeller out of my pocket and pushed it against the ward, holding my breath as the ward glowed with light. It shattered, snapping out of existence with a loud bang. I wasn't reassured. I'd taken down the ward, but anyone monitoring them would know precisely where to find me. And they might be able to track me too, I thought, as I darted past the broken ward and hurried down the corridor. I may not be magic, but I'm carrying magic. I heard something behind me and threw myself against the wall an instant before a hex flashed past me. I spun around, spellcaster raised. Two men were running towards me, their hands casting spells. I jabbed the spellcaster at the nearest and blasted him, throwing him back into his companion. Their wards took the brunt of the blast, part of my mind noted dispassionately, but they were still stunned. I jabbed the second spellcaster at them, then turned and ran. They'd have problems breaking the spell before it wore off. But I don't know how long it will last, I reminded myself. The spell could be cancelled if someone found them before the spell wore off on its own. I'd read stories about objects of power that transfigured or controlled people, objects of power that had been lost long ago, if the stories were true. Their spells could be cancelled by someone else, but not broken by the victim. I wondered, as I glanced at the spellcaster, if I'd just reinvented them. It's just a pity they really can't be fine-tuned. The air grew fresher as I ran up a flight of stairs. I felt as though I was underground, although I wasn't sure. The walls still felt oddly familiar, even though I couldn't place them. Where was I? Where were we? I ran around a corner and nearly crashed into a young man wearing brown robes. I shoved the spellcaster into his chest before he could react. He froze, held in place by fear rather than magic. "I can see magic on you," I said. It was true, thanks to the spectacles. I'd see a spell if he started to cast it. "You start to cast a spell and I blast your chest, understand?" He nodded frantically. He didn't seem that much older than me. I wished suddenly that I had time to ask him more questions, starting with whoever was behind the whole plot. But I rather suspected he wouldn't know. Dad had taught us about setting up patronage networks and satellite patronage networks. The people who were part of the secondary network might not know that their boss had a boss of his own. And their ultimate superior wouldn't want them to be able to betray him, I reminded myself grimly. Even Firouza might not know who she worked for. Or she might be under a gesh of her own to keep her mouth shut. I'd heard horror stories, mainly from spying on some of Dad's meetings, about spells that ensured that criminal masterminds could never be betrayed. He won't know that much. I glared at him, trying to make it clear that I would hurt him if necessary. I will know if you lie, I told him. Where are we?
Aragon, he said. Let me go.
Stay still, I growled. Aragon? It meant nothing to me, but I hadn't heard of everywhere within the kingdom, let alone outside it. Which way to the exit? His body started to shake. I swallowed a savage word. A gesh, then. He couldn't tell me anything useful, not even to save his life. And yet, he had given me a name, hadn't he? Or was it false? I didn't know. Dad had interest in a place called Celadon, but that was right on the edge of the kingdom. I didn't know anywhere else that sounded remotely close to Aragon. Tell me where the nearest window is, I said instead. Perhaps I could give him enough leeway to fool the Gesh. Or maybe... Show me. He inclined his head down the corridor, an instant before his entire body collapsed. The Gesh had knocked him out, rendering him comatose until his comrades found him. I felt a flicker of pity, combined with disgust. Who was he? What was he doing here? I studied his robes for a long moment, but nothing came to mind. He looked like some kind of priest. There was nothing about his face to suggest a specific origin. I heard the sound of running footsteps hurrying towards me. I yanked one of the potion bottles out of my bag as I moved, splashing the liquid on the floor as soon as I was several meters from the comatose man. Someone shouted behind me as I straightened up. I fled, running as hard as I could. A second later, another explosion shook the building. I heard the sound of pieces of falling masonry hitting the ground. Wherever we were, it clearly hadn't been designed for magicians. Or perhaps whoever had lived in the building, once upon a time, had known better than to brew unstable potions. The air grew colder as I made my way along the corridor, spellcaster at the ready. More flickers of magic darted through the air, but they didn't seem to be doing anything. They weren't wards, as far as I could tell, nor were they seeking spells. I studied one of them, trying to pass out the spell form, but it was so warped as to be beyond recognition. It didn't seem to have any purpose, as far as I could tell. I felt a brush of wind against my face and grinned, my legs starting to ache as I pushed myself onwards. If, when I got home, I promised myself that I'd go for a run every day until I was fitter. I'd never been as pudgy as Bella, but I clearly wasn't a fast runner. But wind. I turned the corner and ran into a large room. A giant window dominated the scene, revealing utter darkness. I stared, trying to see something, anything in the gloom. If the cold air hadn't smelt of the outside world, I would have wondered if I'd found something else instead. A balcony, perhaps. The darkness was near absolute, yet I looked up and saw the stars. The constellations were largely familiar. Dad had taught me to watch the skies, but out of place. I tried to pass it out, slowly. We'd moved east, I thought. And that meant... My blood ran cold as I digested the implications. I might be on the edge of the kingdom, or I might be outside it altogether. I peered down as my eyes slowly adapted to the darkness. The walls were crumbly, with plenty of handholds, but I had no idea how far it was to the ground. I kicked myself mentally. There were objects of power that would let me see in the dark, like my namesake, but I hadn't thought to make one. If I started to climb down, what then? If I fell? A hex struck my back. The bracelet grew warm just for a second as it absorbed the spell. I spun around and jabbed the spellcaster towards the oncoming men, forcing them to take cover. Panic gibbered at the back of my mind as I tried to think of a plan, but there was nothing. There was only two ways out of the room, the corridor or the window. And both of them were dangerous. Or I could just stay where I was. I looked from side to side. The room was bare, completely empty. There was nothing I could turn into a weapon, nothing I could forge to save myself. If I'd stayed in the suite, I gritted my teeth, unsure what to do. The longer I waited, the greater the chance that my captors would find a way to get me that didn't involve magic, or simply cast spells that got around my defenses. Or...
"You can't escape," a male voice called. "You don't even know where you are. Drop the focus and give up."
My bracelet heated. I blinked in surprise, then smiled. A compelling voice. Alana had been fond of that spell, at least until I'd developed the willpower to overcome it. But it wasn't normal for 12-year-olds to be able to do that, was it? I made a mental note to ask Akin if he could resist the spell. Not that it mattered, not right now. My bracelet protected me from direct mind manipulation. A head poked up. I jabbed the spellcaster at him. It vanished abruptly. "Got him," I thought. It wasn't much of a victory, but I clung to it. They should have made their wards stronger. Although I wasn't sure if they could make them strong enough to stand off an object of power. My makeshift spells weren't precise, and they were somewhat inflexible, but they were strong. What will they think of next? I worked the problem in my mind as I tried to divide my attention between the corridor and the window. If I was considering climbing down, someone else could consider climbing up. Or... I kept trying to look into the darkness, but it was too dark to make out much beyond faint glimmers of magic. I couldn't help finding the sight disturbing. Where were we? "Cat," a quiet voice said. I tensed. Feruza was standing at the bottom of the corridor, holding a large scutum shield in one hand. I gritted my teeth as I passed out the runes on the shield. It wouldn't be hard to blast the shield, or shields, once the others picked up their own. But the runes would give them some protection. They'd just keep advancing until they caught me, or I jumped out the window. "You don't understand what is at stake," Feruza said. She sounded as though she was trying to be reasonable, although the nasty bruises on her face made her look angry. I wasn't too concerned. A few minutes with a healer would patch up the scars, if there was a healer nearby. One of the magicians might have some healing training, even if they didn't.
"You need to work with us."
I pointed the spellcaster at her with one hand, while pressing the bracelet into my bare skin with the other. If it got hotter...
"You took me and my friends from school, then cast forbidden spells on us," I charged angrily. "Where are we?"
Feruza rested her shield against the wall, exposing herself.
"You are quite some distance from civilization," she said coolly. "I know we haven't kept you in the best of conditions, Caitlin, but you don't want to go out there."
"Why?" I challenged. "What is out there?"
"Dangers," Feruza said.
She sounded tired.
"I can return your friends to their loving parents, Cat, if you come back and stay with us."
I was tempted just for a second. Akin and Rose had seen enough to help Dad track down Feruza and her superior, hadn't they? But I didn't trust Feruza to keep her word. She could offer to swear all the oaths she wished, yet it would be easy for her to trick me. I wouldn't have trusted her to do anything. Akin and Rose would probably have their throats slit as soon as they were outside the building. The Gesh wouldn't let them resist.
"Why should I trust you?"
I racked my brain for options. Going out of the window was starting to look like the best of a set of bad choices.
"What could you possibly say that would actually manage to convince me that you're telling the truth?"
Feruza looked irked.
"I won't let you leave, Cat," she said. "Either stay with us, or die."
I swallowed hard. That was it, wasn't it? What Dad had seen and I had missed. My mere existence was a shift in the balance of power. Anyone who wanted to restore the balance could do it simply by killing me. Dad had believed that Jude's was safe too. He hadn't realized, not really, that the balance of power had shifted too badly for the school.